Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, admitting mistakes, part one of two. Here we go. This is an interesting topic because, frankly, making mistakes just doesn't happen that much to me. So I really,
yeah, you're above it. And so this is for everybody else but you, Mike. So you'll just have to listen and play your part and tolerate the rest of us.
Well, good. I'm not sure I can contribute much since I don't do this often, but
yeah. So is this the part where you say just read your lines? No,
of course. Right. There you go.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting you say that. It's kind of a joke, right? Because you and I both try, we both try to not make mistakes. We both do. We make different kinds of mistakes, but it makes me think there's a whole series of casts here about the most likely mistakes the various DISC profile people might tend to make, what mistakes they would make that would tend to be invisible to them, right? I probably wouldn't make a mistake when it comes to people, but if I made a mistake relative to people, it'd probably be invisible to me. But anyway, I think,
yeah, I think there's more, yeah.
I think there are people that think that a successful career or any given week is about avoiding mistakes.
Yeah, good luck with that, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're me, of course.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Unless you're Mike. This is the non-Mike cast.
So, obviously, we're talking about dealing with mistakes and admitting mistakes because, man, we all learn this the hard way sometimes. But, you know, relatively early in my career, I learned about admitting mistakes and the power of admitting a mistake when I made one. In the rare case that I made one, but I didn't know it right away. And man, I wish I had, because it was really a fundamental leap in my ability to have relationships with folks, because we make mistakes all the time. And when we don't admit it, we just compound our error 100 times over.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I think has always been helpful to me about mistakes is how different they are than other behaviors. You know, you think about career tools and manager tools. We recommend a lot of proactive, a lot of health and wellness kind of professional stuff. We recommend prevention rather than cure, right? We recommend proactive early on. Hey, do this early and you'll have less trouble late. Learn these lessons early or do this early in the process. Things will be better. But when it comes to mistakes, if you told the young person, look, you're going to make mistakes in your life. And then they said, well, look, my goal in life then is to figure out every possible process and system and maximize my effectiveness within so much and be so efficient that I can eliminate all mistakes. Which, of course, would be a mistake in and of itself. But this is one of those things where mistakes are inevitable. They are a part of the human condition and certainly a part of the professional condition. And so this is one of those cases where we don't, you know, certainly there's prevention to be done. But because it's inevitable, there's also after action to be done, right? This is the after action for the mistakes we're all going to sooner or later make.
Exactly. And we're not going to do a cast on how to make mistakes. That's the one
you probably won't that would again be the non-Mike cast, because it wouldn't apply to you. I would just be telling everybody all the big mistakes I've made.
There you go. So, lest people be confused, though, this cast applies regardless of the size of the mistake. It doesn't matter how big or how small it is, what type of mistake it is, what part of your career you're in.
That's right.
It doesn't matter. The things we're going to talk about today work regardless of the kind of mistake or the size of mistake that you might have made.
Exactly. We've got six steps. And I would like to start, before I go through the steps, and just say this, that if you've ever seen somebody make a mistake, everybody knew it, whether it's political or social or economic or professional or industrial or sales or manufacturing or engineering, what else, they make a mistake, and you've seen the person, and everybody knows they made a mistake, and you've seen the person dissemble or try to avoid it or deflect criticism, whatever, and you say, well, that was done pretty well, but there's a party that said, gee, they probably should have just admitted it. And then you also have seen somebody admit it, and people get surprised that people admit it, and then they're amazed at how good things turned out when you admit it. This cast is to help you see that you can admit it. It does work, and it's really the more effective way, even if it's not the most practiced way today.
Yeah.
So we've got six steps. The first one is the easy one. We recommend you admit it quickly and emphatically, and also, by the way, actively, which we'll talk about in a second. We also want to spend just a minute talking about how dangerous it is to let mistakes go, which most people tend to do. Number two, essentially numbers two through six are five questions that we need to ask ourselves that essentially structure our mistake correction process. And they are, what happened? What are the consequences? Who else needs to know about the damage or the mistake? How are you going to fix it? What's your action plan, if you will? And then how are you going to inoculate yourself against it or prevent reoccurrence? And these are all questions that help our thinking, but they also help our briefing. And this cast is certainly skewed toward, what do you tell your boss? Right? Now, certainly if your boss is not involved, but somebody else is involved, then of course you would tell them. But this is the best way to prepare people for this is to think, okay, if I've made a mistake, if there are implications, if I had to tell my boss, what would I do? These are the steps. What happened? What are the consequences? Who else needs to know? How are you going to fix it? And how are you going to prevent it in the future? That's it.
There you go. Now, the first one, admit it quickly and emphatically, and then you added, and actively.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't I heard that or read that before somewhere? I don't know. Did I?
Yeah. We figured that as often as people say to us, can I give you some feedback? it's time for us to use things that we've heard that really, really work for us. And it is. It's Dale Carnegie. Our good friend Mike Swenson reminds us about Dale Carnegie's stuff all the time.
I thought you were going to say our good friend Dale Carnegie.
Oh, no. Yeah. We're buds with Dale. Yeah. Good. Yeah. We hang out together. Now, Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People book is on our most recommended list. It's one of our Hall of Fame books. There are a lot of people who don't get it. There are a lot of people who want work to just be about rightness and correctness and accuracy. And yet work is, what do you know, all about people. But we stole it directly from his book. And it's, he says, when you're wrong, admit it quickly and emphatically. And again, we'd say it differently if we could say it any better than that, but that's it. Look, the simple fact of doing that, when you make a mistake, now look, we're not talking about I'm adding up some numbers to double check somebody else. I add it the first time, it doesn't seem right. I add it again and I get it right. That's a mistake, but then I corrected my mistake within a second or two, right? And there's no impact because the work now is right going forward. But literally, the simple fact of doing this one thing, admitting your mistakes quickly and emphatically, is going to make you more effective and more efficient. And of course, in the long run, more respected. People will think you're gutsy for doing it because the reason people don't do it is not because they're clever, it's because they're fearful. And it'll, in fact, also make you better at avoiding mistakes because once you are clear about the process going through and because you've done it in public, if you've had to brief somebody, it will be a very clear lesson. Whereas I think what people do when they hide things and they don't tell anybody is they start getting good at hiding things, which makes them more comfortable making mistakes, which isn't the way to go. So we recommend don't try to hide your mistakes. Don't. Everybody knows you make them. There are people who think nobody knows they make mistakes, but everybody, of course, knows that they do. Just admit your mistakes.
Okay, so let me stop you there because I've read and I've seen, and this makes a little bit of sense to me, that with a little bit of effort, you know, I mean, there's enough wiggle room out there. You know, objectives are not always exactly clear. The system right. is not exactly perfect. So right. with a little wiggle room, you know, I can figure out a way to skirt this to make it, I don't know, at least less clear that it's my issue. You know, share the blame with others. There's always plenty of people to share blame with. Maybe I go about and quietly fix it without anybody knowing about it. Wouldn't that work? I mean, wouldn't that kind of preserve my reputation as well?
Yeah, I think it certainly works because the 99.9% of the people we know are doing that now, right? I catch myself doing it. I'm sure you do it at times. I would say this. One of the things I noticed you said is, you know, I figure out a way to blame somebody or share the blame. I think the vast majority of people who consider themselves really good at avoiding trouble, who know they've made a mistake and then are good at cleaning things up, at fixing things up. I think there was a movie once where one of the roles was called The Cleaner. You know, and they're just really good at that after action thing and
Mr. Fox
look okay. Was, yeah. Yeah. I think those people who are good at it would say, oh, no, it's not about blaming. And what we've come up with, and you can hear it, and we'll talk about this later, you can hear it in passive language. That's why we recommend quickly, emphatically, and actively. People use passive language to describe things. And we'll give some examples in a second. So, yeah, you can do it. Look, we're not saying that everybody's been wrong all along. We're recommending a specific way of dealing with mistakes that you make. There are every single person listening to this is going to come to a different comfort level at what scale of mistake they are going to apply this reasoning. Let me put it this way. For those significant, enormous risks, mistakes that you know lots of people are going to find out about, this cast is your solution. This is what to do. Go quickly to your boss, tell your boss, hey, look, I made a mistake. Here's what I did. Here's the implications, and walk right through our model. Okay. At least at the first level on this one, Mike, I would say this cast is for anybody who makes one of those big, let's call it a career limiting and career threatening or at least month threatening mistake. Maybe not career, but month or quarter threatening mistake. The kind of thing, if you make it in February, you wouldn't be shocked to hear about it at your interview review. And this cast has value for that reason alone, because people don't know what to do when they make a big, hairy, audacious mistake, a BM, if you will. Okay? They don't. So that's the first part of this cast, sort of obvious, right? And if you're young and you make that mistake, here, use this cast and you'll be better for that discussion with your boss and you'll be more prepared.
Yeah. But isn't there a danger, though, of engaging that practice too often where you almost become too slick? It almost becomes a habit. Obfuscation or looking to blame others becomes a habit. And you don't use it just for the big things. You start using it all the time.
For everything. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's my point. Yeah, I think the second part of this cast, the cast that really will speak to maybe only 10 to 15% of our listeners, is you can apply this all the time. Not only will it make you less likely to make mistakes in the future, although you'll never eliminate them, you'll be much better at handling your mistakes when they happen. And so, you know, I'm reminded of the example. It's a U.S. example, and I'm sure there are other international examples that are every bit as powerful. You know, remember when Tylenol was tainted, the Tylenol, the headache drug was tainted. It's got to be, I want to say, 30 years ago now, may have been 25 years ago. And it's still talked about in business school case studies for how, I want to say it was Ralph Johnson, who was the CEO at the time, said, it's simple. We're taking all the down on all the chef. We're just going to ask ourselves, it's the right thing to do. We did certain actions and then say, and look, here's what happened. Here's what we're doing about it. And this relates to a little bit the damage control. If you talk to people in damage control, and we'll do another cast about that someday, which is tell your story early, you know, and over respond, if you will. So yeah, that's the second part of the cast, which is, the standard of I'm going to cover it up is rampant. And in many cases, people would say, but look, Mark, it's not that big a mistake. And so, you're right. And I'm not going to argue with you. What we're suggesting here works in the biggest of examples. If we assume 0 is you tied your shoe wrong and 100 is you cost your company $1 million and that's the total margin for your company for a year. So your company will be unprofitable based on your mistake. That's obviously a pretty big mistake. I think everyone ought to agree, at least in principle, and they ought to see the value of this cast from 100 down to probably 85. Okay. I will agree that from 0 to 10, you don't need to apply this cast, right? There are some people who would argue about 10 versus 5 or 20 or whatever. Fine. The problem is the rampantness, I don't think that's a word, of the obfuscation and passive language and avoidance and lack of responsibility taking between 85 and let's say 10. And we're recommending that you could push this process down, this fundamental professional disaster or mistake process, if you will, communication and after action process, from 85 down to 30. And you would outperform in the long run those people who think, well, I'm going to slide by. The mistake that people make is when they make a problem, an error on the level of 60, they've gotten good at sweeping their 30 and 20 and 40 problems underneath the rug. They can't sweep the 60 problem underneath the rug. They don't know how to do what we're recommending here. And then what happens? Then they're caught not only making the mistake, but covering it up. And as everybody knows from politics, the cover up is always worse than the deed itself.
Yeah. Agree.
So you're totally right. You're totally right that there are people out there who think they can get away with it. And that's part of the problem. And sometimes they're rewarded for it or they're not punished for it. And so it's a reinforcing mechanism that we recommend in the long run. If you want to be a real professional, this is the way to do it. And it's rather than saying, let's see how far I can go covering myself up from the bottom, 0 to 50 or 60, let's push down from the top, from that 100 problem where we know we'd have to own up to it early and often and address it. Let's push down to 50 and 40 and 30. Just handle it in the other way.
Yeah, and the determinant of how low you go is not really a function of how embarrassed you are about it and whether or not you're willing to share it, or even how small it is. The really determinant of how low you go is, at what point does your apology become an annoyance to everybody around you because you're apologizing, oh, I'm sorry, I sneezed, or
yeah.
What, you know what okay. I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I would agree. And look, I'll tell you, I think to your point you make, my sense is that there's a steepening and a slickening of that slippery slope toward what you're talking about, the excusism, the passive language. And let me just address passive language here because I think it's important. I think there are a lot of people who don't know it. If you're a writer, of course, you're clear about the difference between active and passive language. But here's a good example. Hey, the code didn't work, or this thing broke, as opposed to I broke it, or I didn't write my module correctly, it won't run, or the statement, the data are faulty. Well, of course, data inherently cannot be faulty, right? You say, what you say that it's active is you say, I set up the search wrong. Right? Or our numbers are off. First of all, that our word, the we, is if, you know, right? As opposed to I didn't make my number, or I didn't contribute my number to the overall team's number. Or somebody saying the project is delayed. And by the way, when you're looking for passive, if you're looking for folks a clue to whether or not language is passive, if you're a manager, the active thing to look for, or the key thing to look for, is the form of the verb to be, is, are, was. Our numbers are off, the data are faulty, the project is delayed. The right way to say the project is delayed is, I failed to see this resource constraint and I missed a deadline. And when I missed my deadline, that put the project in delay. And so we're recommending not only that we talk early, that we do it, we admit our mistakes, but we use active language when we own up to a mistake or an error. Folks, we're not taking responsibility for something professionally when we use that third person or we use that passive language. If we don't say we did it or I did it, then people are going to begin to think that you're attempting to share blame or responsibility with other people. And while you may get away with it, they don't love it and they really want you to step up, and they'll respect and reward you for it when you do. So, and to go a step further, if you know, we've shared before, I'm sure, a podcast called Owning the Inputs, which is, if I'm responsible for putting together a book for Mike so that he can look at it for a particular client, and somebody on our team hasn't done their part, doesn't eliminate my responsibility to have it to Mike and to say, well, I have everything done but person X, I can't do that. If I own the task, then I own all the inputs that are required to get the task done, and I have to help the owners of those inputs help me get things done. So that's true as well. Even if we didn't specifically do the thing that caused the problem, if we were responsible for the failure, the missed deadline, the no number, we still say we did it, right? Even if somebody else was actually responsible. And yeah, there are bosses that'll throw you into the bus and say, well, I'm going to get you, even though secretly we know that the boss knows that somebody else didn't do what they're supposed to do. But that's how you learn to be responsible. And when you go through pain like that, you say, well, I don't want to ever have that happen again. I'm not going to trust that person as much. I'm going to build in safeguards so that I can, you know, be sure that I'm responsible and delivering upon my responsibility. So we have a simple formulation that we recommend when it comes to owning up to your mistakes and saying, you know, we're going to admit it emphatically and immediately and actively. And the formulation is first person personal pronoun, which is I or we, an action verb, and then the object of our actions. So in other words, I broke it. I set up the search wrong. I didn't make the number. I failed to plan well. I missed the deadline, right? That's the way to talk. When you make a mistake, it centers everything back on you. You essentially give everyone else cover. And then if there are other people that own up to it after the fact and say, well, Mark's taking responsibility, but actually, you know, Robert and Terry and Jane, they all had an issue as well. When Robert and Terry and Jane step up and say, no, Mark's just being, you know, being kind, that looks good.
Look, I can see how stepping up and taking responsibility can make somebody look good. But man, that active tense there, doesn't it make you look worse? Doesn't it just make a bad situation worse?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel exposing in a way. And look, if everybody else is doing the other thing, the excuse driving, the passivism kind of thing, then why would I want to stand out by taking responsibility when it appears you can get by and get by quite well without doing it? Well, we just disagree. The fact is, your boss will be astounded by your candor. The benefit of being coy and slippery in this case is smaller than the benefit of admitting your mistakes quickly, emphatically, and actively. That's really what it boils down to. Now, the benefits are different. If you're coy, you maybe will avoid punishment. But if you admit things, the benefit is you're seen as a person with high character. You're seen as a person who takes responsibility. And you may be able to avoid punishment, but frankly, if you have a choice, this may be an interesting, you know, manager tools or career tools law, Mike, which is take any chance you have to be seen as responsible and high character, even when it comes with a punishment, right? Rather than seeing it as avoiding punishment, accept the fact that the punishment may or may not happen, but what we ought not to be doing is avoiding the punishment. We ought to be seeking the chance to be seen as a person of character and responsibility. If that comes with punishment, okay. But in the long run, the character and responsibility is the thing that benefits us.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's long-term thinking, and it's hard.
Yeah, and sometimes doing the right thing is not easy. Otherwise, yeah. We'd all be doing it, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we also said we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what happens when you delay, because it's that immediate thing that is so important. We did say quickly, right? This is really more of an exhortation. You know, when we say mistakes get worse if you leave them, if you're leaving them and you're trying to cover them up as opposed to fix them and talking about them, that's a form of leaving them. So we thought we'd give a couple of examples as a way of exhorting everyone to see the light side of this equation. This example of Jim, the junior accountant, he works at the really low level of a large multinational, fast-moving consumer goods company. It's 7 o'clock at night. He's got the boss's budget in front of him. He's tired. He's lived on pizza. He's got to have something to his boss at 8 a.m. He puts in the last figure, $800. It's done. He's thrilled. He can go home to his wife, and he hasn't been home in a week, so she's complaining. Boss gives things a quick look. And Jim's always on top of things, and he sends them on to his boss, which is now Jim's boss's boss. Jim comes in later, grabs his coffee, realizes, oh my gosh, that 800 should have been 800 million.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And then he says, well, but you know, I was tired, and now I'm really embarrassed, and now the boss's boss has seen it, and maybe it won't make that much difference when everything gets rolled up, because it's just a draft of a budget. It's not the actual numbers. It's not dollars. It's a plan for dollars. Unfortunately, though, for Jim, as he sort of dissembles about the whole thing, the spreadsheets are being reviewed by Jim's boss's boss's boss. When the feedback comes down from there through the chain, it's 3 weeks later and decisions have been made. And now senior people are pissed. And that's an example of somebody saying, you know, I think it'll be a wash, or I think it'll be okay. You know, on the other side of the equation, forget about money for a second. Forget about numbers for a second. You know, we've got a customer service agent, Rosie. She's having a bad day. Her 2-year-old wouldn't go to daycare, wouldn't go to the childminder. The 6-month-old just was in a complaining mood this morning. The company's biggest customer is on the phone. It's a secretary, and they're changing an order for the third time. Rosie decides it's time to stick to policy and say, hey, I'm sorry, the order can't be changed. Now, she doesn't tell her boss, but he finds out 2 hours later when the CEO of the company calls his boss, Rosie's boss's boss, because the customer's CEO is called. Turns out that secretary was the customer's CEO's secretary. And the customer's threatening to go elsewhere, right? Stupid, probably, if you have a long history, but it doesn't matter. The CEOs like to support their secretaries when they say, I got treated poorly by this vendor. The problem is whether it's true or not, whether they're really actually thinking of going somewhere else. Now we're going to put a lot of resources into saving and maintaining this customer that we wouldn't have had to have done. Now, look, in both cases, I don't know. I mean, there are very few people who have had any length of career at all that can say, oh, I've never done anything like that. I mean, gosh, we've all got whoppers. I've got big ones. Heck, I got fired, right? So you have to assume I've made some mistakes, right? You know, there are times when you make mistakes.
Yeah, I've sent that email late at night where I wish I could have taken it back. And
yeah, in my case, I still remember a guy named Robert, a great guy. I still know him quite well, and we're cordial with one another. And Robert was struggling in his job mightily, and his boss, a VP, asked me what to do based on an email that he had sent to her. She asked me what I thought, and rather than responding to her, I responded to him saying, you know, this is really a firing offense. Now, I was right, but it didn't mean I hadn't damaged the relationship. So in this sense, this cast is not about not making mistakes, okay? This cast is about dealing with the mistakes as we make it. And, you know, in the case of Jim, Yeah, it's bad to go have to go to your boss. It's embarrassing. It's painful. I have to go to your boss. I say, boss, sorry, just spotted a mistake in the spreadsheet. Order of magnitude error, right? But that's bad, right? And everybody's trying to avoid bad. The problem is it's much worse when his boss hears it from three levels up. Now he's embarrassed and worried about his career, and he's got to put on top of it. If Jim didn't know the mistake, then Jim's inaccurate. Or if Jim did know the mistake, now Jim is not honest with his boss.
Oh, God. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
which is the kiss of death, right?
Yeah.
Right. In Rosie's case, she could have spoken to her boss, got some advice, called the secretary back. Look, I consult with my boss, and we can change the order. I'm sorry. You know, I regret it. I probably shouldn't have stood on policy. It happens. But again, it goes back to the same thing. You can, if you've made a mistake, act as soon as you realize. And taking action, means telling somebody, right? Don't try to sweep it under the rug. Don't try to fix it real fast. And it's okay to know exactly what needs to be done, but it's also valuable to tell other people what you're doing. And I'll tell you, too many people try to figure out how to avoid talking to their boss.
Well, particularly if your boss is a yeller or a screamer, right? That's
yeah.
It's easy to talk yourself out of it then.
Yeah, the problem is, though, it's if they're a screamer, the question is, what we do is, the analysis we do is, I don't want him to scream, and he's not screaming right now if I don't tell him. The problem is, we ought not to be comparing some screaming to nothing. We ought to be comparing the some screaming he will do to the size of the screaming he'll do if he finds out about it from somebody else, and on top of that, realizes we could have told him and we didn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But everybody, right? What everybody's doing at this point is avoiding risk. They're not considering the whole range of possibilities. They're trying to avoid any risk at all without thinking about the bigger risk that occurs if you're caught trying to cover things.
Yeah. At least they're avoiding short-term risk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The expense of increasing long-term risk. But
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Most risk aversion recommendations say avoid the long-term risk, not the short-term risk.
Exactly. Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week. But we'd be remiss if we didn't wish you a happy 2010. Mark and I think it's going to be a great year, and we hope it is for you as well. All right, folks. See you next week. So long.